The Share Pickers Podcast.
And joining me on the podcast right now, and of course, live in Technicolor, we will be looking at some charts. So, check out the video. Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communications. You're Al?
I'm good, Jess. How are you?
I'm all right, you know. It's almost like, when is the sun, is rain going to stop? Even this morning, I got up, it was raining again. Oh, for heaven's sake, stop the rain.
Well, actually, I took the opportunity to get out earlier on this morning and spread some fertilizer on my grass because I thought, well, I've...
It's a practical thing.
Yeah. We have to do it. You see, we've got new bits of grass. It's all blending in nicely. So I thought, well, now's the time. You've got to put it out in March. So it's going to chuck it down tomorrow. I know that. But I think my weather app's got 89% chance of rain, which means it'll definitely chuck it down all day. Mm. So, you get the fertilizer down before the rain. Rain, you know, down comes the rain, soaks it all in, then the sun comes out, grass goes mad. So that's the thing.
Yeah,
and it has worked in previous years.
Yeah. Well, you say that you took the opportunity this morning to get some fertilizer down. Are you saying also saving money on flushing toilets, aren't you? Because if you go outside and doing that yourself, then...
No, I think...
You have to go early while the neighbour's not up.
I think you're thinking of obscure villages in China, somewhere in China, where they actually use human excrement and human waste to actually fertilise the fields. But I haven't got
that. What you don't want is a neighbour to catch you doing that, so you have to do it very early in the morning.
You have to get out there early, before.
Oh, look, Alan again outside. Yeah. Look at him. What is he? Oh, no. Why are we living next to this lot? Right. Okay, yeah. Let's talk about some stocks then. What's on your list today?
Okay, so following on from last week, we're looking for quality companies that have delivered in the past, operate in a niche sector in the market. So I've got two of those for you, but I've also got a stock that which has been restructured on Aquis, and I think offers a fantastic opportunity. So firstly, we're going to talk about Trifast. TRI is the Epic Code. It's a company that's based just up the road from me, actually, in Uckfield, in East Grinstead. And this company, long history, lots of success. The company's it manufactures fasteners. So if you go on the website, you look at the products, you'll see lots of little washers, lots of little nuts, little bits of little connectors, all the rest of it. So if you walked into B&Q or if you walked into Halfords, for instance, you have all these little packages. So you want to sort of fix the electrics in your car or do some new stuff. And this is what this company does. What they've done over the years, they've acquired a series of businesses to the point where they are now, you know, they're now pretty much global. They operate in over 70 countries. Exactly. So there are the products you can see on the screen there.
Screws and bolts, nuts, washers, circlips, rings, seals, O-rings, fasteners, machine mail. They've got all of it there.
Well, they have, and they do those little trays. And you know, me doing what I do in my spare time, I restore old classic motorbikes. And of course, I've got trays of these nuts and bolts in the garage because they're great. You can replace old fasteners with new ones if you're restoring an engine, and you get that engine looking good again. So it's a huge market. I mean, the company has done sort of great work over the years. If we look at the, I'm just going to reduce this a bit, actually. And I'm going to go to the most recent update from the group. Now, this took place on the 22nd of January. The company has had a difficult time. And obviously, you can see looking at the chart that it's reflected in that. They generated lower than expected volumes from from their Asian businesses, and they anticipated seeing a recovery from the subdued first half. That's not yet happened, so they expect the challenging conditions to persist. But what they've actually done, they've actually undertaken a restructuring program, cut operating costs by some 10%. They've also cut back non-operational staff around the world, which will deliver annualized savings of about 3 million. So they're going to have a leaner organizational structure. But I like the business because this is a business that is cash generative. And obviously, they've had issues, they've had difficulties, but it just generates steady turnover and steady cash generation. And this is the important thing. And I think the I think if we look at the chart, we've seen that big fall at the start of the year, and of course that fell, that fall took place on the day of the of the trading statement. The shares have climbed up to 93p. They fell back, and we've seen a year low. Well, we saw a year low, in fact, back in November last year of 66p on the year, and we're still above that low, which is encouraging. So I would expect if trading starts to improve and the actual cuts undertaken by the company start to impact on the bottom line, I would expect to see that share price start to creep back up again. But it's a good cash generative company. It does pay a dividend yield of 2.9%, so you know, not a big dividend generator, but nonetheless, you know, if you're investing in this company, it's and you get in at the right time, then you could see a successful year in terms of capital gain, and also, of course, you'd be earning that small 3% dividend from the company as well.
Well, look at that. Since the half year to September, top line obviously dipped a little bit from 120 million to 117. Gross profit was better, so gross margin was better there. And if you scroll down, it's all going well until you get financing costs. I've seen they've gone up a bit, so I assume they've borrowed a bit more. Because they've gone from 749,000 to 2.7 or 2.1, 2.8 million. So let's look at the balance sheet here.
And that's what they're impacting or moving to impact on now with this 3 million saving. But, you know, it's obviously going to take a while to actually filter down to the bottom line.
But nevertheless, cash and equivalents at the end of the period, 32 million. So they're a 99 million market cap, and they're sort of sub 100 million.
Yeah.
And they've got cash of 32.
So this business is a big cash area, always has been, and it's had a, I wouldn't say checkered trading history, but it certainly delivered results in the past. But it's in a niche market. It's in a market where they have huge supply contracts, and also lots of retail sales as well. You know, through outlets like Halfords or B&Q or whatever. So there's plenty of cash being generated by the company. It's always got that ability. So it's relatively easy for a CEO and an FD to undertake a restructuring program if, for whatever reason, there's a hitch in sales. So
quite, do you know what? Look, they've repaid the borrowings. That's where the problem. So 98 million. So they've got no debt now. Oh no, they've got 59 other interest bearing loans, and this is long term. About 60 million there, but nevertheless, net assets are 131. So they're below that, their market cap. So I always say, if you've got a company that's doing okay, generating cash, and they blow net assets, it's worth a look, because of course those assets will grow over time, they're generating cash and all that stuff. And well, one of the watchers out, I like that. Yes. It's one of those companies that's very boring. I mean, of course manufacturing, gross margin up a huge, but boring is often the way. If you've got a boring, stable business, you know, that's what you want, isn't it? So
well, this is
multi-year low there.
Yeah, well, if you look at the chart there, it's really, really come off those highs, and you've seen this gradual, you know, fall in the share price. But it is a cash generator, and you know, the balance sheet sort of illustrates that very well, and they're able to pay this debt down. So when you're generating cash like that, you might hit a challenging trading period, or one of your outlets doesn't perform, but you can. Because you're generating cash, you've got that opportunity to restructure. And if you need to borrow, you can probably borrow at favorable rates and then get it paid back fairly sharply. So, and I always remember years ago, David Paul, God rest his soul, from Vectorvest, he was a big fan of this company simply for that reason. He said, it's a boring company, but it's a cash generator and it'll carry on paying this little dividend. So you've got a little 3% dividend. And if you catch it at the right time, I mean, it's not inconceivable that we could see a big surge and recovery, you know, as the global economy starts to recover.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'll put through that through my stock score list and see what the points are, what it comes up with, where it ranks in my top 100 microcap stocks. Okay. In fact, this is my list here. This is in alphabetical order. 100 stocks valued by in ranked by growth, value, health, efficiency, momentum, potential, and we're looking at that. In fact, looking at we'll talk about Aquis again, but they did release a full year results. And you can see here, growth is okay. It should be in green for the growth, really. But 106 million market cap. growth is okay, health is fine, and value is not that good. So if you scroll down, you're like 4.5 times sales, PE of 20, price to book. So it's not cheap. But it's a good little business, though. But it did spike up a little bit. But the average broker target from the brokers are 150% up. So, you know, their target is 967 from 386. Yeah. I think, how are they getting that? That's amazing. They are literally talking about 10 times sales almost. I think, that's not cheap. So I'm always worried about companies that are valued that highly, because you're thinking, well, if they go wrong, if they miss estimates, they're going to get a big fall. But nevertheless, so the chart, yes, last week after they announced news, did spike up a little bit, and it spiked above that 200-day movie average, which I think it's coming a long way.
I mean, operating an exchange like Aquis is a challenge at the best of times, but I think we've seen so many iterations of Aquis over the years. Of course, we had the OFX market, then we had ISDX, we had Next Exchange. And obviously we then morphed into Aquis, but I think the actual structure of the business now lends itself to growth far better because it's operating across this pan-European market. It's a lot of the stocks are dual listed, and its opportunities to make or generate profits are better than they've ever been. And I think Aquis is emerging as the exchange for or the exchange of choice for companies coming to market wanting to raise money, but without the budget to say, you know, list on the AIM market or even take a standard listing with a £30 million market cap minimum. So Aquis is the venue of choice in that regard. And I think as we see the economy recover, as we see interest rates start to fall and inflation start to fall as well, I think Aquis will continue to benefit from that backdrop.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, to be fair, in a tough environment, they've still improved. I mean, it's not a huge improvement. Yeah. I mean, you know, the top line from 19 million to 23, operating profits gone up from 5.8 to 6.2, even, you know, profit after tax gone from 4.6 to 5.2. So the metrics are still improving, even this tough environment for Aquis. But, you know, nevertheless, it is valued quite highly. But because it's a data platform, the broker suggests should be valued even more highly. So I'm just saying, you know, high valuations are always a risk as well, as you know, because if they don't achieve the growth, then there's a big drop off. But okay, what's next, Al?
Okay, so another growth stock, again a favourite we've discussed sort of many times over the years. Just this is Team 17 Group. TM17 is the epic code.
Well, yes, in fact, Debbie Bestwick, who's I think was a long-standing CEO there, and one of the founders, wasn't she? I think about me.
She was the founder. Yeah.
She recently, I forgot. You know, approached her on LinkedIn, and I can't remember when, but she recently accepted. So I don't know how often she goes on LinkedIn, but now we're connections on LinkedIn, but there we are.
Well, probably beforehand, just she didn't have the time to respond to mere mortals such as you and I, but she of course stepped down as chief executive. I mean, Debbie was the founder. She grafted night and day to build this company up. It's a real British success story. You know, it's the company's done in incredibly well. Currently got a market capitalization of 336 million. Shares are trading at £2.26 or 226 pence. Mm. Year high of £4.50 or 450p. Year low of 145. Starting to recover off that big drop-off last year. And that big drop-off last year was really from a profit warning. But the company said at that point that you know, there were certain titles within its games label that weren't meeting internal expectations. But since the first half results, they had to undertake a re-evaluation and a restructuring. And of course, they then made provisions for impairments on the year of up to 11.5 million. So the full year EBITDA of 28.5 million was cited at that point. And indeed, there was a further trading update at the end of January from the new chief executive, Steve Bell. Steve, of course, joined the business in September last year, formerly took over as group chief executive. And he's, you know, he just said overall the group are very pleased with how full year trading for 2023 had closed out. Positive momentum across the portfolio, and you know, very exciting prospects, and I think that's starting to reflect now in the share price. And of course, Team 17 was renowned as a manufacturer and provider of games and games to, and indie games, and it was the partner of choice and worked alongside indie developers to help them develop the game, and then of course became the marketing channel for them, and that's something that Debbie and her team you know generated huge success from. But the investment proposition has evolved since then. They now include have their own games entertainment label, remaining that creative partner for indie developers. But they also now develop educational apps, and they have apps for children under the age of 8, and also a working simulation games developer and publisher. So it allows, if you like, developers to trial and test their games out. So it's a really good business model, and I think Steve has come in, had a good time. Debbie, of course, remains on the board as a non-exec director. But again, this company has delivered stellar returns for investors over the years. Trades on a PE ratio of 16.8, which isn't really too racy, I don't think, for the sector. But if you look at the share price performance, we've seen a drop off, I think, since 2022. But certainly when we
Well, COVID was a boom, wasn't it, for games developers? You know, a lot of people just sitting at home playing games. You know,
absolutely huge. I mean, 200p all the way up to I think 5-10 year
£9 there.
£9 a share. That's it. And I think we were talking about it sort of during that time, during that growth period. But of course, it's evolved and it's changed since then. So I guess now I'm asking the question. You know, looking at that 5-year chart, we're now seeing the stock has returned really to those levels that it was trading at. Is that, you know, are we looking at a second opportunity? Are we looking at a second growth phase for the company under the new CEO? You know, the company's evolved because it's had to. It can't be that indie developer anymore. It's now got other strings to its bow, as it were. So are we going to see a new phase of development for Team 17? And I think, you know, given the success the company's had in the past, the team of people that are working there and helping to build this company, you know, I think few would bet against them. And I'd argue that now is a good entry point.
Yeah, it needs to get, it's had a couple of sort of technical breaks. It's oversold, it's bounced on the 200-day, gapped down in the trading update there, gapped down again, hit a low down here, 148. It's rallied again on technical bounce this. It keeps having these lower highs. But I would suggest maybe now, because that was a sort of a bounce here, maybe we are close to a low because, 22 days, I think, the results are out. They got some results out.
Yeah, that's right.
And just looking on the thing. So,
and the trading update sort of, again, reiterated 28.5 million EBITDA. So they'll come in with that. I've absolutely no doubt about that whatsoever. So I think, you know, once the numbers are in, and you know, the analysts can study those numbers and just confirm the company's performing, then I think we could be looking at a breakout point. And obviously we'll be looking for some early indications of how the current year is going.
Yeah, well, average broker targets are 313 at the moment because, of course, it's a bit subdued there. But market cap, like I said, 3 million. Good night, see enterprise value always below market cap means we've got more cash than debt. So operating profit, 32 million last year. So cash of 50 million.
Yeah.
Which is nice. So enterprise value, 280. Like I say, growth is there. It's got 52% last year. Operating profit, not as good. But value, PE of 14 is fine. EBITDA, 5 right now. So it seems, you know, decent value here. Efficiency, look at the margins here. Gross margin, 50. Operating, 23%. That's good. Return on capital employed above 10. It's nice. The only thing, the problem is momentum. You know, like I said, the share price is not above 50, 200. Or the Golden Cross hasn't happened. So, it's a decent company. I think it'll bounce back.
As you say, results out of the way. But I think the results, you know, if they confirm what analysts will be looking for, then I'm sure we'll see that Golden Cross take place, because you know the gaps are closing, aren't they? And I think we are seeing, you know, a bottom forming here, and I think that should be the catalyst that the share price needs to start to move higher.
Marvellous. What else, Al?
Okay, so different stock this time. This is a company called TruSpine. The website just is TruSpine, TruSpine.org. So if you go there.
Yes.
And then if we go to.
This is Aquis, isn't it? I can't get
this. This is Aquis, yeah. No. So go to Spinal Fixation Devices, okay?
Oh, bloody. Ha ha ha. Okay. Oh, my word.
Yes. So
that's painful to look at. Survey lock.
this is a multi-billion dollar industry, and everyone, you know, I've had issues with my back. Everyone has an issue with their back at some point. So so this is a company that has really had a challenging year, I would say, the past year. The company has faced challenges from the US, in that the guy that invented the devices such as Servilock, such as Grasp and FasciLock, has basically sued TrueSpine, or told TrueSpine that it doesn't own the IP. The company irrefutably owns the IP. That was established by Chief Executive Lawrence Strauss. But because the share price had come down so far, I mean, we're currently trading at just below a penny. The shares have been as high as, well, an awful lot higher than that. But the company has just undergone a major restructuring, and fund manager Jeff Miller has come into the company as chairman. And last the week before last, the company raised $136 million and a total of $270 million plus additional monies to come in, which will...
$130 million? You mean
130
grand? 136,000. Yeah, 136 million. Wow, that's good going.
It's raised 290,000 through the issue of just under 20 million new shares at a price of 1.5p. It's also through Jeff Miller going to be raising a further 136,000. And it has approved an unsecured convertible loan note to the value of $1.5 million. It's also entered into warrant surrender deeds with historical warrant holders for 16 million warrants, which are out there in the market, some up to as high as 7p. So those have now all gone. Jeff has brought with him two non-exec directors, one non-exec director, Victoria Senna, formerly worked for the Bank of England. She's got a risk management background, and they are going to work with existing management to help develop the TrueSpine offering, in particular Servilock, which is currently with the US FDA awaiting approval. Provided that goes through, and they're some way down the road with that process now, then the sales will commence in the US, and there's a team in place all ready to do that. They have partners that they'll be working with. But this is a hugely exciting development, because effectively it's brought £2 million into the company. The company currently has, if you look at the Aquis website and look at the share price, it currently has a market capitalization of 1.1 million. Mm. So it's not even reflective of the total cash that the company the new management team can bring into the company. So this is it's a pivotal moment for the group. Of course, once that FDA approval comes through, they can start marketing Servilock, generating sales from that, and then they can expand the business. And Jeff has a background in biotech and life sciences, and I'm sure they're going to be developing the company going forward. But it's a pivotal turning point, you know, for the group. And I think it's investors might feel it's speculative at this stage, but when a chairman comes in like that, puts a lot of his own money, and also puts a lot of his own family office money in, per se, that to me is a very good sign indeed.
Yeah, like I say, FDA approval, that's, you know, and all that, it's really tough. I mean, you know, assuming Polarion was going to get slam dunk, FDA approval, and they're going to knock back. And so you never know what's going on with FDA. To me, it's a black box, FDA. You never know. I mean, because Polarion, I think it was like 95% chance. They did two phase three trials, passed with flying colors, submitted to FDA, and FDA knocked it back, and the share price crashed. So I'd wait until that happens at least. But of course, pre-revenue stocks are quite, you know, risky. Say a little loss making, but interesting story. And like I said, back problems. I'm getting back problems all the time.
Yeah,
I'm sitting at the computer watching TV sometimes, just looking down at my laptop. My neck and my back is not aligned properly. I need to get a proper sort of, I can't just put that in the living room, proper sitting up on the carpet, proper sort of office chair I need in the living room. Because I always got my laptop out looking at stocks and shares. And so my posture is really bad.
Yeah, that's the thing. I think there's a generation now of, I say generation, several generations of people who are sitting on their laptops or on their tablets and trying to do three things at once, watch TV at the same time, maybe have a sandwich and work on the laptop. And yeah, from a posture standpoint, it's not good at all. But I think the solutions here are for people with moderate to severe spinal problems, but I think the technology is revolutionary and it's been recognised by a large number of investors, and particularly the company one of the companies that's behind the restructuring are very much engaged with that process, and I think we're going to see more institutional support for this company as it evolves and as we get further news on that FDA application.
So what did you say about the litigation thing? Is that over or not?
It's over. Yeah, it's gone. The company last year, there were so many US investors that were backing the CEO, and it went, the lawyers got involved, and they have proved beyond any shadow of a doubt that the IP belongs 100% to TruSpine, and therefore, if the founder wants to do anything, he's got to work with TruSpine rather than against them. And I can tell you, certainly from a company level and from a personal level, I was getting a lot of let's just say messages from supporters of the founder last year. And all of a sudden, since the announcement was made that the IP was absolutely confirmed as belonging to TruSpine, they've all gone very quiet. So they've obviously done their homework and realised. So, and then you've got Jeff Miller and the team coming in. You know, that says to me that, Jeff Miller is a very savvy fund manager. He's been around the block a few times. He won't be making those sort of moves and putting that sort of money in if he's not pretty certain of the outcome.
So you've got 7.24% now in the company, by the looks of it.
Yeah, that's right. We TR won this morning, 7.24% of the company, and that will rise, of course, once the other money's come in. So direct and indirect being through his family company, Afafa Limited, which is also an investor into TruSpine.
Okay, TruSpine. Yeah, Jeff Miller. There we are. It's up there. Yeah. So he's got 6.8% of that. Okay. Marvel stuff. Well, listen, do your own research, everyone. Put you back into it.
Put you back into it.
Yeah, exactly. And, everything on this podcast or video is not investment advice. Shouldn't be considered investment advice. It's just ideas. You know, some ideas are good, some ideas are bad. Please do your own research and take responsibility for your own money. It's your money. Nobody else's.
B-Y-O-R.
Yeah, exactly. Marvel stuff. Thanks, Val. Speak next weeky.
Cheers, but cheers, just been this weekie. Oh, it's Easter next week.
Okay.
Hey, 4 days off. Yes.
The Share Pickers Podcast with Justin Waite. The content of this podcast is not intended as investment advice. It is for information purposes only. People in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.